The pandemic has made it hard for some students to take their admissions tests. Why are Florida schools still requiring them? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Florida is one of only two states where its public universities still require SAT and ACT scores. But a lot of high school students are having a hard time taking the test as the pandemic has closed normal testing locations.
This is what we've been working for our entire high school experience. And now that can all be taken away from us just because we don't have these test scores.
Also, the program Guitars Over Guns has trained thousands of young people in music. It's about to train a lot more. We'll talk with the CEO about winning the Elevate Prize. But first, we'll answer your questions about voting, mail-in ballots, and voter intimidation. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, the 2020 election ends in less than 2 weeks. In Florida, 3.6 million voters have already cast their ballots early and by mail. The pandemic has made this election different in many ways. Still, as with previous elections, we're already seeing stories of voter intimidation. We're going to talk about what you should know, the do's and don'ts, as you head to the polls. Joining me now is Broward Supervisor of Elections, Peter Antonacci. Mr. Antonacci, always a pleasure. Thanks for the time.
Good afternoon.
And again, we want to hear from you. If you have questions about voting, now is the time. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Mr. Antonacci, your presidential election is already a challenging endeavor, but how has the pandemic impacted your office as it prepares for this election?
We've had to do some additional logistical planning and deployment. Mostly that has to do with making sure that the right kind of supplies are at every early voting location. That includes all the obvious things, the wipes, hand cleaners, et cetera. And that our poll workers have masks and gloves in sufficient numbers. We've also gone to the expense of buying individualized pens that are in plastic. They're plastic in case, so they're very clean, so that voters have a device to execute their ballot with. And we've also hired janitors for each and every polling location early and on election day to clean up after every time someone votes. The janitor goes to the privacy booth and wipes it down with material that kills COVID.
Yeah, basically, so, after every person, we have to clean after every single person is going to be the challenge compared to past.
That's what we're doing.
Anyone
else? It's very expensive. It's very expensive, and the Broward County Commission has been generous in making sure that these kind of safety precautions are deployed.
Now, we've been hearing about record numbers of people who've already voted. What do we know about numbers and vote-by-mail ballots so far? What's come in?
Well, we're right at 300,000 that have returned their ballot, which is about 50% of the ballots that are on the street. I'm expecting that we'll get about 500,000 ballots. Vote-by-mail ballots returned of the 600,000 that are out there. That's an extraordinarily high percentage and obviously a high number. Broward has 1.267 million active voters for this election, and 500,000 to heap the votes.
Yeah, and by the way, have you started counting those votes? When can you?
The law allows... particularly because of the volume in Florida, we allow supervisors to begin tabulating the ballots. We began on the 20th of September tabulating ballots, and we have continued to tabulate. So all 300,000 of them have been tabulated. The results are unknown to everyone, including myself, and they remain confidential until 7:01 on election night.
So... As I mentioned in the intro, we're starting to see this unfold. People in Florida, other parts of the country, receiving threatening emails in an attempt to influence who they vote for. Now, the FBI has concluded that Iran may have been behind these emails, but what's your message to voters who are hearing these stories and they may be receiving some of these threatening emails?
Go vote. Just ignore it.
Just ignore the emails. Ignore the threats. Is there anybody they should
call? Absolutely. We're Americans. We should be fighting.
Have you heard of anybody in Broward County getting any emails? Has anybody called you and told you about threats they've received?
No.
And obviously, they're getting our emails, so the question's coming up. Is our information
safe? They're getting who's our?
Oh, they're getting whoever these folks are. Again, if it's from Iran or if it's coming from Estonia, wherever it is, that they're getting people's emails. And so there's a question of, wait a second, is my information safe? What information is available?
Well, I can't speak to what's available on the internet. As you know, the internet is an open sewer in many cases. And all kinds of information is available. I can't speak to that.
Okay. But
if people get emails, they should ignore them and go vote.
Is there any concern that we should have about hackers and hacking the system?
There are two parts to that question. The first part has to do with the statewide voter database, which is connected to the internet. Every Congress decreed in 2001 that every state had to have a voter database for the whole state. And so for those purposes, everyone is connected. We have followed the advice of all of the security consultants and security agencies and purchased every piece of software that is available to provide early warning if there is any penetration of our system. I have heard none with respect to Broward County. So that's a situation where you have to be mindful all the time of what may be happening. And keep in mind that we have an open government regime in Florida, so it's very easy to look things up on the statewide voter database.
Yeah. The other part
with respect to tabulation, that's a different story. The tabulating system is not connected with the internet in any way, and I have absolutely no worries about that being penetrated.
All right. Good to know. Thank you for the information. The other aspect of intimidation I wanted to ask about is this. Obviously, we hear stories of people at the polls, and we've heard threats from different groups that they're going to be monitoring the polls. But what do you tell your poll workers about what to expect and how they should handle, whether it's a group that they may be out there, with their signs, maybe intimidating voters or more than that? But what are the poll workers told and how they're supposed to handle that?
Well, let me repeat myself. We're Americans. We should not be intimidated. Now, I just visited three of our early voting locations. We have 22 of them. I visited three of them this morning. And when you drive by these early voting locations, there's many, many in the tens or maybe even more advocates that surround the early voting site. They cannot get within 150 feet of the entrance to the polling station. But there's lots of political advocacy because of our robust First Amendment that takes place outside the 150 feet zone. Many voters don't like that. They feel like as they're parking their car or as they're walking toward the polling station, you have the advocate for Councilman Smith or Councilwoman Jones that is importuning them to vote, and voters don't like it. That is the biggest category for me that I hear about from voters. They don't like being importuned at the polls. The 150-foot zone, it was once 100 feet, the legislature extended it to 150, was a good reform, and it pushed first the advocacy groups. And by the advocacy groups, I mean just people who are supporting people who are standing for office. So you push the advocacy groups out a little farther, and that's good, and I think voters appreciate that.
Yeah.
But it is an election, after all, and people are out trying to persuade.
Yeah.
And persuasion sometimes in a First Amendment context can be a little rough and tumble.
Again, we're talking with Broward Supervisor of Elections Peter Antonacci about what you should know when voting in this election. You could find a voter guide, by the way, a map of voting sites in South Florida, links to sample ballots, and more at WLRN.org. Mr. Antonacci, where can people drop off their ballots right now?
There are 44 post offices in Broward County. Hard to believe there are that many, but there are. Most of them have a drive-up blue box where you can drop off the ballot. If you prefer in person, there are 22 early voting sites. The map that you mentioned just a moment ago has the Broward 22 sites that are conveniently located throughout the county. And finally, 24 hours a day, there are two drop boxes, one at the downtown Broward County Administration Building on the Brickell Avenue side of the building, and at the Water Hill Mall, on the rear entrance of the Water Hill Mall. Both of those are around the clock, and they're very convenient and well used.
And if someone can't make it to the ballot box location, is it okay for someone else to transport or pick up their ballot?
Not pick up, but certainly drop off. There's a pickup exception that requires an affidavit, but the drop off, people can drop off so long as they're not paid for the service.
Gotcha. One thing that we've heard from a few people is because of the humidity, some of the mail-in ballots are arriving and they're already sealed. What happens in that situation? How do we do that?
Welcome to the tropics. Unfortunately, we've gone to the extent of pricing a different system where you have a peel-off tapes and they're very, very expensive. And perhaps in the future, those will have to be used, but as it works today, it's a very frequent situation where the return envelope gets stuck. My recommendation to everyone is to split it open, put your ballot and your secrecy sleeve inside, and tape it shut. We'll be happy to take it and process it routinely.
So you can put tape on it and just tape it shut, and you're okay with that?
I'm okay with that, sure.
All right.
So is our canvassing board. It works pretty well.
Just want to make sure. The other issue, too, of course, is the signature matching. How could people check to make sure? I mean, because the signature changes, from time to time. But they have to sign it, right? And they have to match. That has to match.
Well, first, let me say that has been a tempest in the teapot for more than 5 years. And in my estimation, it's overblown. Here's what the situation is: when the signatures are matched, very, very few of them are mismatched. Right now, I think we have about 30 of them of the 300,000 that we received where there's a mismatch. And on each occasion, the voter gets a letter. If we have a telephone number, they get a call or an email address. They go to an email saying, come down and cure your affidavit. And a voter has until 5 o'clock on the Thursday after the election to cure if there's a signature mismatch. And so the system works pretty well. We have much more of a problem with people not signing their ballots at all. That's our biggest problem. I think most of it is forgetfulness, but some of it, maybe people are trying to make some kind of statement by not signing their ballot on the outside.
Yeah. What if somebody requests a mail-in ballot, then they change their mind, decide they want to vote in person?
Very frequent occasion in our community, and there's no downside whatsoever. You get your ballot by mail, and you have an opportunity to scrutinize it and help you make your decision. You can come and vote in person and discard the ballot however you want. Makes pretty good paper for bird cages and the like.
Okay, that possibly, I didn't think about that. The other thing, too, is, when people come to the polls, Can a voter wear campaign material, clothing with political messages, things like that?
Yeah, this is always a tight factual question. So the law permits voters to wear paraphernalia, all that you mentioned, buttons, hats, shirts, et cetera, that are advocacy in nature, into the polls for voting purposes. What the law condemns is any advocacy attendant to the wearing of that paraphernalia. So, yeah, you're allowed to come in, but not to showboat in any way for the issue or candidate of your choice.
I see. Let me finish with this. There's been a lot of discussion about how different this election is going to be. Votes may continue to be tallied past November 3rd. So remind the listeners of the timeline of the election and the counting process.
Yeah, well, they're not going to have to wait for our county. They have to wait for some other counties, but we'll be done election night. There's a very tight schedule that the legislature has laid out. But it involves a lot of post-election reporting. But for our purposes, we will have all the early votes counted on the day before the election and ready for announcement. We'll have 90% of the vote-by-mail ballots tabulated and ready for announcement. And in our prediction in our office, that'll be about 800,000 votes. It will announce at about 7:01.
So you're saying
will give Brown County a very good idea of the outcome.
Okay, you're saying on the record that you're confident that come 7 o'clock, after 7 o'clock, you're going to have the results for Broward County.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't say that. I said all of the early votes.
Okay.
Which will be somewhere between 300 and 350,000.
All right, I want to make sure.
90% of the vote by mail, which will be somewhere between 450 and 550,000. What we will not have is election day results and last minute vote by mail. That will constitute less than 20% of what will be announced at 7:01 on election night. All these things are very doable, even in a large county. If you put your shoulders to the wheel, most things like this can be solved. And we've solved them in the last few elections, and we're going to do it again.
Because it sounds like you're confident. I mean, look, it's South Florida. You know your predecessor and the troubles that they had before. That's why you're there. And look, we talked about this the other day, the 2000 election. South Florida just has a history. But you're confident that things are going to be a lot smoother this time.
Well, if it's not, you can say I told you so.
Okay. All right. Well, fingers crossed. We're all hoping that it's smooth and, you know, it's a tight state.
In truth, we're all working very hard to put on a good election for Broward voters and to announce timely, accurate results. After all, that's what an election office should do.
Yeah. And look, it's we know it's Florida. It's a tight state. A lot of tight races. We're going to be ready. Again, talking with Broward Supervisor of Elections, Peter Antonacci. And remember, you can find a voter guide, a map of voting sites of South Florida, and links to the ballot at WLRN.org. Mr. Antonacci, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
All right, you as well. All right, still to come. It's a catch-22. Florida public colleges require SATs, but many students can't take them because of COVID. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Choosing a college is a major life decision, but some South Florida high school seniors find they may not get into the public university of their choice. The Florida Board of Governors has yet to drop the SAT or ACT requirements for these institutions. According to a recent Miami Herald report, as of September, 60% of high school seniors in the state did not have their test score yet. The COVID-19 pandemic has forced testing centers to either close or offer limited seating availability. So a lot of students haven't taken the test yet. Trinity Joseph is a senior at SAS North. She's been studying for the SAT since her freshman year, but each test since March has been canceled.
Right now, I don't have SAT scores, which is the exact opposite of what I planned for my senior year. The Florida University school I wanted to apply early action to, I missed out on. So I feel like I missed out on a lot of financial aid benefits too. Florida schools have always been my first choice. But if I can't get access to financial aid, I'm afraid college isn't an option for me because my family can't afford it.
Well, joining us now is Maria Martinez. She's a student and student advisor to the Miami-Dade County Public School Board, who represents Trinity and all other students throughout the county. Maria, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate being here. Thank you so much for having me.
And also joining us is Anna Ceballos, an education reporter with the Miami Herald. Anna, always great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And by the way, we reached out to the Florida Board of Governors for a comment or to have a representative join the program. We are yet to receive a response. The offer remains open, though, for a later date. Maria, let me start with you. You're a senior and a student advisor, again, to the school board. Was the SAT-ACT testing a primary concern when you first started? I mean, how did that come up for you?
Yes, I got elected in August of this year, and the very first thing, even before reopening of schools, the seniors had already told me my SAT and ACT got canceled. It happened over and over again for months, and a lot of seniors, they don't know what to do. They have their hands tied, and we know that this is very important for our future, and we don't know what to do. So that was the main issue that seniors brought to me as student advisor.
And when it comes to signing up for these tests, how do you do it? Right now, I mean, like, you know, what's the process right now?
Right. So you go to College Board and you basically just sign up for a testing center. But the thing is that it's first come, first serve. And testing center finds out they have to have a certain capacity because, of course, to abide by CDC guidelines and make sure that everybody's protected, they have to have a certain capacity. So they don't tell the students until the day before, or 2 days before, whether or not the testing center cannot afford to have them in their, like, take the test in their location. So it causes a lot of students to not be able to have this test and to not administer this test. And then that causes all these failures and everybody not being able to take the test. And it becomes a problem with our future.
So I'm imagining that you just have a bunch of students online trying to get a seat. And those seats are filling up so fast and or they're getting canceled. So they're just waiting for the next opportunity.
Right. That's exactly what happens. We try to get the very first location. Even some students are going all the way to Naples, which Miami-Dade County, Naples is very far, and some can't afford to go that far. Some can't expose themselves to the virus, and others don't have the transportation means. So it becomes a point of how do we get these exams, and how are we able to provide these stats for our future colleges and scholarships?
Yeah, Naples, of course, a couple of hours on the other side of the coast of Florida. Right. Anna, only Florida and Wyoming have yet to drop requirements for this test. I mean, what's the reason that the Florida Board of Governors have held on to keep this as part of the admissions?
So that it still remains as one of the bigger questions, or the biggest question. When I started reporting on this story, that was the one question that I wanted answered, but I have not received an answer to it. They said that, you know, that the Board of Governors is closely working with the test administrators to make sure that there's enough tests and that they believe that there's still enough time because they have allowed universities to extend the deadline for when test scores need to be submitted. So if your application is due at a certain time, say November 1st, you would still have until December 1st to submit your test scores. You don't have to do it on November 1st anymore. But that still leaves a question of there's tests that are still being canceled. And yeah, you're right. I mean, Florida and Wyoming are the only states, and there's really no reasoning as to why. They just have said that there's enough time still, and that, you know, it's a matter of standards, according to some lawmakers who I talked to.
But, you know, the other thing I'm thinking is this. Those are the only two of 50 states, the only two that require it. So I'm thinking, how are the other states getting by without the test that we can't seem to do the same thing?
And that's one of the big questions, right? I talked to a few school counselors, and one in Miami-Dade said that it's time to, given the circumstances, a pandemic has really disrupted the lives of thousands of students, not just the schooling, but also the preparation for these tests. They haven't been able to take the tests. So they're saying if other states can do it, and they're looking at it in a different lens because of the situation, why can't we look at students in a more holistic way and consider other items in an application without requiring these test scores?
Yeah. Maria, I wonder, and again, this is for public institutions. So let's say if you want to go to Florida State or University of Florida, you know, it doesn't apply to the private schools. But what are you hearing from students at this point? Because we're coming up so close on the deadline, that are they just choosing other schools? Are they choosing to just put off a year, you know, maybe go somewhere else and then transfer? What are they doing? What's the option?
A lot of students have told me, like Trinity Joseph, they're trying to maybe look at the prospect of having a gap year because they're not going to be able to take this exam. And other students have told me that they're going to try to take the November one that's coming up, but who knows? You know, they'll only send the email when the time approaches. So they're studying, and of course, we're going to try our best to take that exam, but it really depends on College Board and depends on the capacity, of course, of the cases of COVID as well. So it goes on both extremes, and you know, there are a particular group of students who have been able to take it, so they'll be able to apply, but the majority group are either going to take a gap year or they're hoping for the next exam. That's all we can do at this point.
Yeah. Let's hear from Anna Pages. This is a person who is spearheading a petition to make Florida public universities test optional.
I really believe that the class of 2021 should get a chance to go to a good college or university in the state of Florida without having to take the SAT or ACT. This issue affects thousands upon thousands of Florida students throughout the state. This isn't just one person. This is all of us. These are our futures. This is what we've been working for our entire high school experience. And now that can all be taken away from us just because we don't have these test scores. We don't have these test scores because we are in the middle of a global pandemic. And the state needs to realize that that is not our fault and we shouldn't be penalized for it.
All right. That petition link, by the way, we're going to share in our social media at WLRN Sundial. Maria, the other thing, too, is this for people to remember is the test. I mean, some people can take it. Depends, right? They can take it without having to pay. But in most situations, it's pretty expensive.
Yes, it's extremely expensive. If you have free or reduced lunch, you get a test waiver, and you only get two. And with everything that's been going on with, you know, test cancellations and College Board knowing that it's a little shaky system, some students haven't even received their waivers. They've been charged for an exam that they haven't been able to take. So honestly, the process has not been the best. And some of us who before would have gotten a free waiver are now having to pay for the exam.
Again, I'm talking with Maria Martinez, a student advisor and senior at SAS North and Miami-Dade Public Schools. Also with Anna Ceballos, reporter for the Miami Herald. Again, Florida public colleges and universities still require the standardized testing scores, the SAT or the ACT, but a lot of students can't take them. Again, because of COVID, lots of tests have been canceled, and of course they have to social distance, so there are limited seats to take these tests. Susan Grodin is an educational consultant. She reached out to us via email saying this: applications at our state universities are down 20 to 30%. The University of Florida extended their application deadline from November 1st to November 16th, which may help, but already 19 SAT test centers have closed for the November 7th test date. So more test centers are closing. Anna, the University of Florida came out and said that their freshman enrollment has dropped 23% for 2021. UCF and FSU also experiencing major drops. What have the schools said about, you know, the reason for the enrollment drop? Is it just the pandemic?
Well, it's certainly it's raising questions about whether kids who are not being able to take the test, who might not be able to afford out-of-state tuition, who need in-state tuition, that could be a contributing factor in terms of, again, not being able to take the test, just exacerbating the inequity with whether or not they're going to be able to afford tuition. But also, you know, it's, I mean, the, I think there's just various reasons. It's not just whether or not they're able to take the test. The pandemic has really upended everyone's lives, and the plans have changed for many. And universities, you know, they, when we asked them, we asked the Florida State University, we asked the University of Florida up here in North Florida, and they all keep saying, you know, our hands are tied really to the Board of Governors' decisions.
Do they?
So right now.
Do the universities want to say, look, we'll throw the test out. We don't care. We need more students.
Well, they haven't really quite said that, but I think a lot of them have indicated, you know, that they will go along with whatever the Board of Governors decides. So I'm sure that if the Board of Governors decided something else, and if they're seeing a drop in enrollment, maybe they would, it would be welcome news. I know that it's been considered, and there's been pushback on the Board of Governors. Again, the reason is really not known, but a student representative who's a member of the board mentioned this in the September meeting, and they said that it was at the forefront of students' minds, and that she knew that there was pushback.
Remind us, too, what the Board of Governors is made of. Who is on that board?
So the Board of Governors is just made up of members who are appointed by the governor. A lot of these people are, you know, not... It just varies. There's about 11 members, and they each have their own expertise.
but they have a lot of power.
They do, yes. And we should note that for our story, we requested interviews with both the board chair and the chancellor, and they both declined. So not even allowing the conversation to just to understand what's going on.
Yeah. Maria, I wonder if, you know, there are groups, students right now, you know, gathering together, trying to help each other. Because, look, it's stressful enough to prepare for this test. Now you're stressing about it, whether you can even take it. And that will determine your future. But I don't know, like, what when you talk to your fellow students, how are you helping each other?
Well, as of right now, we're trying to have a lot of Zoom sessions, like Zoom study sessions. I know certain schools are doing weekly Zoom sessions over the weekend where we study together. You know, we're trying to adjust to the new normal. We do, like, usually during the normal school year, we would have had group study sessions after school or at someone's house after school sometime. But now with the new normal, we're adjusting, and we're trying to, you know, make the best of it. And it's not easy because now, even with the testing centers, we do have certain testing centers that, even if they're not our top pick, they're the available ones. So we try to go to whichever one is available. And some testing centers are making students wear, like, put their testing booklet on their lap instead of the desk.
Yeah.
So it becomes a point of how do we prepare fully for this exam that we don't know what we're walking into. Before we had a clear picture, and now it's become a different thing, and we just don't know what we're getting into.
I am really feeling for all the students right now. I mean, I was lucky. I took the test a few times. I needed that much extra help, and I can't imagine. I can't imagine what's going on right now, but I hope that everything gets worked out. Maria Martinez, again, a student advisor for the Miami-Dade County Public School Board, representing Trinity and all other students throughout the county. Anna Ceballos, education reporter for the Miami Herald. Maria, Anna, thanks so much, and we'll keep an eye on this story to see what happens.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, you can share your story with us on social media, WLRN Sundial, or you can email us. Tell us what's going on. Find us. Email us at sundial@wlrnnews.org. Well, still to come, a local organization that has changed thousands of students' lives through music just won a $300,000 prize. We're going to introduce you to Guitars Over Guns. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, over the past 12 years, Guitars Over Guns has helped thousands of young people in Chicago and Miami find a path into music, like Caleb Alsim, who's now a drummer playing with gospel groups and also working as a program associate within the organization. Chad Bernstein co-founded Guitars Over Guns after years of touring with the likes of Shakira and Pharrell and Pitbull. He still plays in Miami with groups like Spam All-Stars and Sueñalo. The organization just got a big boost They're one of the 10 winners of the inaugural Elevate Prize. The Elevate Prize Foundation, based in Miami, is providing at least $300,000 in funding and professional support to help grow these organizations in their mission. Joining me now is Caleb and Chad. Hey guys, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be here.
What's up? What's up?
All right. Chad, let me start with you. How would you describe the mission and the focus of Guitars Over Guns? Did I get it right?
Yeah, I mean, very simply, we want to empower youth through music and mentorship. And, you know, our vision really comes from the fact that we believe that all students should have the opportunity to reach their full potential through both music and mentorship. And unfortunately, the access is not distributed equally or equitably when it comes to opportunities for music education and likewise for mentorship and having people that are in the music world and music industry that are doing things that you're interested in as youth.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're doing.
I mean, you listen, as I mentioned, you worked as a touring musician for decades, and I mean, you worked with some big names. When did you decide you wanted to transition into music education and social justice work?
Yeah. So I think it's a great question, and there was really never, you know, the lines have always been blurred. So everything that I did in the music world helped elevate what I was doing with Guitars Over Guns, and everything that I was doing with Guitars Over Guns helped bring some awareness to who I was as a musician. And frankly, what the students resonated to was that, you know, we were real musicians doing real things in the world, and they could check us out on YouTube or TV or those were things that really helped. And so there was never really this, well, I have to stop doing one to do the other. In fact, it was kind of a you know, wonderfully selfish proposition that both would support and elevate the other.
Yeah. Caleb, how were you first introduced to Guitars Over Guns?
I was first introduced to Guitars Over Guns by a friend of mine. His name was David Pierre. He's now a board member on Guitars Over Guns. And we both kind of grew up together in the same church, and we went to the same high school together. And he was playing a little bit of everything, playing drums. And my main instrument is drums. His main instrument is bass. And he was getting better than me. I was like, bro, where are you putting the extra time to, like, get better than me? And then I followed him, and he ended up at Guitars Over Guns in North Miami Middle School. And I said, can I tag along? He said, sure. I went in and I saw a bunch of mentors, you know, teaching kids. And I asked him, I was like, yo, how much do I got to pay? He was like, nah, you're good. You don't got to pay anything. And so after that, I was like, man, I'm going to take full advantage of this, because it was super hard to kind of find, you know, music lessons for free. You know what I'm saying? These were like top-notch musicians. So it was like getting the best of both worlds. So, yeah, that was kind of how I got involved.
And what's the experience like? I mean, what's the class like, or how are the lessons? How does it differ from when you pay for a class?
Man, it's family. Like, I got to say, like, I wasn't pressured to do anything. It was more of like, yo, you want to play drums? You play drums. If you want to talk it out, you can talk it out about your schooling and your grades and all that kind of stuff. And just to have somebody, like, to speak to you about some certain things that you don't necessarily get guidance on in middle school, you know, how I'm going to go to my friends and talk about some futuristic things when we've all experienced the same thing. We have never experienced anything beyond that. So to have like people like Errol Cooper, who I remember was teaching at the time, who's a great drummer, teaching and learning in the classroom with him was super dope, because I never got to see such a professional musician on such a chill level, like away from the instrument, speaking to me about things different from drums. And then when it came to talking about drums, he went in and gave me all the life hints of becoming an awesome drummer.
If you didn't have this, I mean, where do you think your life would have gone?
I don't even know, to be honest. I got an idea. I'd say, I'm not going to say I came from a too rough background, but my neighborhood's not that friendly. A lot of things I came from wasn't that friendly. So if I didn't have God nor music, man, I don't think I'd be where I am now. I'd honestly say I probably would have been trying to go to the NBA like I was, and then giving up, and then probably catch a 9-to-5 somewhere that, you know, could pay bills here and there and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I'm definitely grateful for that happening in my life.
You know, Chad, how is Caleb's story indicative of, you know, the thousands of students that have gone through the program?
I mean, I think every student is unique and individual, so I would never want to paint every student with any single brush. But I think the thing that's unique, I mean, the thing that is consistent is that each one of our students has a story, and very few of them have ever been asked what it is. And so if the stories that are told about our students are told by other people or, you know, the news or whatever, they're not really in the driver's seat. And it's never, you know, the story of Caleb, who's an aspiring musician who has incredible leadership qualities, who is hungry for opportunity and will surprise you at every turn, who's, you know, tonight hosting an event for us on Guitars Over Guns Facebook page, which is worth checking out as well. But I mean, you know, these are the things that Caleb's working on our full-time staff now, and he's making decisions on a daily basis that affect our students that are in the same position that he was in 5 or 6 years ago. And so I think that's really what's indicative about, you know, Guitars Over Guns' success, is that it's driven by the students. And if we put them in the driver's seat, then we're going to end up in a good place if we're really there to be holding them accountable to their version of success. The problem is, I think it's too often that they're not asked what that is.
Yeah. Again, I'm talking with Chad Bernstein, CEO and co-founder of Guitars Over Guns. Also joining us is Caleb Alsey, programs associate with the organization and an alumni. Guitars Over Guns, one of the recipients of the inaugural Elevate Prize. They're awarding $300,000 in prize funding and professional support for the organizations that have won. Chad, I mean, when you have that kind of funding coming in now, what's the direct impact? Where do you see that money being spent? How will it help you grow?
Sure. I mean, you know, to put it as plainly as possible, we're in Miami and Chicago. We've proven that what we're doing makes a big impact on the students in Miami. We took that to Chicago. We proved that that's a scalable concept, that through music and mentorship, we're able to address and elevate students to reach their potential. There's not a city in the country that does not have the challenges with, you know, communities that have been divested or are dealing with poverty. There's not an instance where you have a musical community where you have musicians that aren't trying to give back and find a purposeful way to live their lives and make an income. And so I think that this program is nationally scalable. And so our goal is to speed up that national scaling process and even look forward to an international presence as well.
Yeah. Caleb, you've been performing as a drummer with groups around South Florida. And again, on top of that, the work that you do with Guitars Over Guns, but I'm wondering, in this pandemic, how are you remaining creative and keeping busy?
Definitely. Guitars Over Guns have definitely kept me busy. We've been definitely working at trying to make sure that, you know, mentors are supported as well as students. So I remember throughout the beginning of the pandemic, it was like, dang, we don't get to see our kids. And that hurts us. Like, those kids, I've built so many bonds with my kids where it's like I see myself in those situations. So I go tonight thinking like, dang, if I was in this situation, I was this student, this is how I would have felt. So I just remember coming to the drawing board with the team and seeing how we can get creative. I remember being a part of the discussion of trying to raise money to support our mentors during the time where, you know, gigs are taken away and all that stuff. And I'm speaking more of a creative as far as like a productivity wise, because I think a lot of nonprofits now, you got to get creative in how to support and stuff like that. So that's kind of where we were going. And as far as like music creativity, I mean, me and the homies, you know, probably through practice times, if I were able to get on my drum set, definitely have build out a better practice schedule and all that stuff. And also with special social distance, we'll go to a rehearsal room and just kind of air it out. We didn't really have no structure to anything in our last couple rehearsals with my guys. We'll just play. And I got to say, like, I think every musician can kind of agree, like, during this time, I think everybody are producing, like, some of the best records they've produced themselves. So I've been playing definitely some weird stuff that I've never played before, and I'm honestly proud of it. And I can say, although it was a negative impact what COVID had against us, but it had a positive outcome on how we basically were able to, you know, strive through it and become a better person and musician.
Yeah. Chad, the organization is, I mean, you're still teaching children, but you're doing it virtually. And now you're in the midst of making an album from quarantine. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we have a really incredible supporter, and Savage Ticket is partnering with us to kind of formalize some of the music that's been written in this time. So it's all original music written in quarantine from students and mentors. And we've been having these showcases every other Thursday. We have one tonight, as a matter of fact, at 8:30 p.m. Is that right? 8 p.m. On Facebook. And the music that's getting shared and the community that's being built in these virtual spaces, I think, is really telling. It's very clear that people are looking for a way to connect. Music has always been that for us, and we've seen how much music has always been that for community as well in this time. And just, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, the opportunity to come together, to listen to music, to kind of lose yourself in that moment, to be, you know, blowing up the chat with support for people and seeing friends from across the country or the world tune in and share some supportive messages and reconnect through that space has really been exceptional. And the depth of the music and the honesty and the rawness of what's being created in this time is transcendent. And we really hope to capture that on this album.
Yeah. You know, a lot of students have aspirations of, you know, turning that music, that love of music, into something that they could do, make a living on it. Caleb, let me start with you. What's the advice that you give them? What advice do you wish you had?
I don't even say I wish I had any advice, because I had access to Chad and all the other mentors. So I was specifically spoiled. But for like students I know now that probably don't have the access I did have, I'd say keep your options open and work diligently on your craft. And I feel like life has become just literally a yes and a no. Like, you have options to do certain things, and that'll always have an impact on your later life. So when I was younger, you know, Tab would tell me, you need to spend some time in the practice room because you didn't sound great the other night. And I would take that advice, and I would spend hours in the practice room. I got friends going out, hanging out, doing teenager things. And I was just like, man, I'm going to stick myself in the practice room and try and cultivate this gift that I have that could possibly make money for me in the future, which it did. And it landed me here. So that's my advice to students, is just